Before I get into the episode today, I just want to say thank you to everyone who voted in the last 5 rounds of the Musicals Madness Bracket Tournament. And I am thrilled to announce with a literal margin of a single vote, it really came down to the wire on this one. Hamilton has taken the crown, with Come From Away in second place by, again, just by 1 vote. Amazing. Thank you so much, everybody. And hopefully we'll be able to do this again in another couple seasons with a whole new roster of shows. Enjoy the episode. Jagged Little Pill is a 2019 rock musical with music by Alanis Morissette and Glenn Ballard and a book by Diablo Cody. It tells the story of a suburban family that seems perfect from the outside, but the cracks in their foundation break into earthquakes as old traumas come to light and a new tragedy rocks their town. My guest today is Janelle Benton, who has seen this show 4 times already at different stages in its development. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Jagged Little Pill. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, Quinn.
How are you doing?
You know, I think as well as possible. How are you?
I'll take it. I am excited. What are we talking about today?
So today we are talking about Jagged Little Pill, the musical, not the hit Alanis Morissette album. However, they are interconnected.
What a surprise coincidence. So Janelle, how did this musical first enter your life?
Yeah, so in college, I actually took a class called The Making of a Musical, and it was co-taught by Ryan McKittrick from the American Repertory Theater and Diane Paulus from the ARRT as well. And Diane Paulus is the director of Jagged Little Pill. So during that class, we learned about Jagged Little Pill. It was in the rehearsal process at that time. So like we learned about how it like kind of came to be, and then we went to New York and actually sat in on one of the rehearsals. So that was like my main introduction to Jagged Little Pill, the musical. Then I saw it at the ARRT, the very first preview, bought that ticket very far in advance. And then I saw it again at the ARRT, and I've seen it twice on Broadway.
Yay! And you saw the very first preview on Broadway too, right?
Yes.
And I also, just to get this timeline straight, so this is spring of 2018, or spring of 2017 when you take this class? When was this?
So fall of 2017, I took the class. Right. Spring of 2018 is when it premiered at the ARRT, and then November 3rd, 2019 is when the first preview on Broadway was.
Yeah. And then February 29th, 2020, the two of us saw it on Broadway. Yes. And then the world ended. But no, I've seen this show. I also saw it in the American Repertory Theater. Did we go to see it together your second time?
I think the second time we did see it together, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So I've seen it every other time that Janelle has seen it, is what we're saying. So we saw it together at the ARRT with a group of friends, loved it. And then a couple months ago, I was in New York, and on a whim, at like midnight, we entered every single lottery that was still open on Broadway. And we won tickets to Jagged Little Pill, which is perfect. So we went to see that again. So we've both seen it, both at the ARRT and its sort of like final Broadway version, although you've also seen it like sort of through rehearsal processes and previews and like lots of different steps in that stage, which is very cool. I also, before we go any further, I want to have a brief diversion to talk about Waitress, because we previously recorded an episode of Waitress, which is also developed at the American Repertory Theater and was directed by Diane Paulus. It was, we did that episode before I had ever seen it, and we finally saw it, or I finally saw it. Janelle saw it for the 5th time last fall, and I'm now obsessed with it. It's so good, you guys. I had no idea. Like, I knew it was good. I just didn't know how good it was. Then I saw it again in London just a couple days after I saw Jagged Little Pill with Janelle, and those are the 2 last shows I saw before the world ended. So, like, it's Diane Paulus all the way down, and everything's fine.
Oh my gosh, yes. I think Jagged Little Pill would have been the last show I saw. I was supposed to go see Waitress in London. That did not happen.
Nope. It's, yep, what a time. Anyway, so This is obviously a show that you have seen many times and keep going back to. So what is it about Jagged Little Pill that you love?
Yeah, so I think there are a few things. So one, I love the music. I actually wasn't very familiar with Alanis before taking that class. I, of course, had heard Like You Oughta Know. But I don't think at that point I had really heard the rest of her music. And then I like listened to the whole album for that class. And obviously her originals were fantastic. But I loved when I saw the musical, the like orchestrations of the songs. I'm not a huge jukebox musical fan. In general, there are very few jukebox musicals that I really enjoy. But this musical, like, didn't feel like a jukebox musical. Even before I saw it, like, saw the full show and had only, like, heard music from it, it sounded like it could have all been original music if you didn't know that the majority of his songs were, like, reworked Alanis Morissette songs.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that if we made a spectrum of jukebox musicals from sort of, like, how well the songs actually fit the story or the story fit the songs, and, like, how much work did they do to make them sound fully integrated. Like, on one side of the spectrum, we have Mamma Mia, and on the other side, we have Jagged Little Pill. In terms of, like, one is just, like, what is... Oh. This is just a loosely connected collection of ABBA songs.
Right. Sorry, just to correct for a second, on one side of the spectrum, we have Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Correct. Okay, we have Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, then Mamma Mia. And then about 1,000 other jukebox musicals, and then we get to Jagged Little Pill, which has, like, full reorchestrations for every number, and you can tell, like, they did so much work to make it sound like these were songs written for this show, which is very impressive. Good job, team.
Yeah, so the music was fantastic. Then the story itself, it's also a completely original story, so it's not, like, a... like biographical musical about Alanis Morissette, and I thought that the story itself was also just like really interesting and addressed a lot of important topics, and it was just, it's definitely my hands down favorite jukebox musical ever. There is a real plot, lots of plot. It's just a great show, and obviously the performers are top-notch, amazing.
Oh my gosh, yes. I have so much to say about the plot of the show, especially because I think this is the show I've seen the most. There are some shows I've seen like pre-Broadway and on Broadway, but this is the one I've seen that has the most changes. I think because it is a completely original story, and I think they had more space and were more dedicated to like moving stuff around. But I feel like they made a lot of changes throughout this process that were really cool to notice. But before we get into that too much, let's talk about the cast.
Yes, let's talk about
because I'm obsessed with them.
Okay, yeah, so the cast of the show is just amazing. So one of the changes from the original to the ART version to the Broadway version, I think they tightened up the story. I think previously, Mary Jane, played by Elizabeth Stanley, was probably, like, the main character, but it was, like, more... The storylines were more, like, kind of scattered in... focus, like, not in a bad way, but like there were a lot of like almost equally almost equal time-wise storylines, whereas the Broadway version, she's like definitely the main character of it, though there are like a lot of people who are very close to the main character in supporting, like she's definitely like the main character of the Broadway one. I don't know if you would you agree.
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I think that like it's definitely an ensemble show.
Yes, yes.
But they do, I think, sort of like center all the storylines around Mary Jane, even when like there's lots of scenes without her in them, and there's like sort of everyone has their sort of like starring moment and song and everything, but I feel like everything sort of is in relation to her.
Yes, yes. I think that's a better way to put it than mine. Yeah, and I think that was, like, one of the big changes that I noticed. So we can kind of start with her. Elizabeth Stanley, amazing, a goddess, great, fantastic, 10 out of 10.
Everyone in the show is doing so well. And this also, like, they transferred, like, the whole cast from Cambridge to Broadway.
Yes. So it was, so Yeah, they transferred, I think, the whole cast. A lot of the ensemble members, too, were from the ART production. So Eliza Stanley, I had never heard anything like that she'd done before. She has a very interesting voice. Like, it's very distinctive, and it's perfect for this show.
Yeah, she's playing this character who is the, like, suburban wine mom. And I think this was a tweet that I once saw this comparison that was, like, Broadway is just a series of stories of white families being sad. I'm paraphrasing, but that was roughly the idea. And I think about that all the time because it's so true. But I feel like this show has like an inversion of that, because the point is that it is a white family and then they have a black adopted daughter, and like race is a very large part of the story, as opposed to just be like only white people can be sad and middle class, that like a lot of other shows sort of implicitly do on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Not to name any names. Anyway, but so this character of Mary Jane is like very tricky in that she has to on one hand be this like really aggressive, like helicopter mom, yoga, rat race competitive kind of person, but then also have this like very complicated past and story, and like be able to complicate her character and her relationship with her children in a way that's believable instead of just like Lifetime movie style. And I feel like she does that is a hard role, and she does really well.
Totally agree. So in addition to Mary Jane / Elizabeth Stanley, you have Sean Alan Krill. Am I messing up his last name?
Krill?
Yeah, Krill. Got it.
He's the only one in the cast that I don't really like know.
Yeah, so I didn't know anyone in this cast except for Derek Klena before like learning about Jack Littlepill. Oh, sorry, Derek Klena, and there is one I think, am I mixing up him from Waitress? I think he's in this too. There's one ensemble member who was in Waitress almost every time that I saw it. And he, I think, now is in Jagged Little Pill. And every time I see him, I'm like, I see you.
That's great. Oh my God. I should also say that, like, I didn't know most of this cast before Jagged Little Pill, but I feel like, I don't know why. I guess maybe because, like, there is a young cast that's, like, active on social media, or just because I've seen the show multiple times and I, like, follow the ART on it. I don't know. I just feel like I'm now, like, very sort of aware of their orbits.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it might be, like, social media, like, since it is such a young cast, because I feel like I definitely, like, have more content in my mind from this cast than maybe, like, any other show.
Yeah. And it's also kind of, like, once I became aware of who they were, I then started realizing that, like, all this other stuff that they've been in.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, I know that thing, or, you know, whatever.
Yes. But, yeah, so he does an excellent role. Well, does an excellent job in his role. I'd say his role is important. It's not as, like, prominent throughout the show. But it's, like, he does an excellent job with it. Especially, I think there are, like, two main songs that he, like, really gets a chance to, like, really like act his heart out in, and he's great. Then moving down, I'll go parents now to the kids. So you have Derek Klena as, I'm gonna go in age order, the older brother,
which is multiple of the actors that are cast as like the kids are like actually very close in age to the people that are mm-hmm. playing. Yes. And then there's Derek Klena.
Yes. So Derek Klena, he does a really good job. Yeah, he's great. I mean, yeah.
No, he's great. Like, he's a great actor, but it's just really funny because he's 28 and he looks 28 and he's playing a 17-year-old.
Yeah. So I'd say that's the only little bit, but he's still fantastic in it. He plays their oldest son, who's like the perfect child who is like internally not doing great with the pressure of being the perfect child.
He's going to Harvard. He's at the beginning of the show, he's been accepted to Harvard.
In the ART version, he's going to a made-up university. Because the ART is connected to Harvard. I assume is the reason why they did that. And then for Broadway, they're like, he's going to Harvard.
when we were sitting there, and then at the Broadway version, and then in the like the very first scene, Mary Jane's like, and my son just got into Harvard, and I was like, did they, that was definitely not in this before.
Yeah, it was just like it was a made-up school before. But yeah, so he like brings his character, I'd say, like gets like really developed like in the second act, because of plot events that occur that break up the perfect child image. And he does a really good job handling that. And I'd say like Derek Klena does a very good job at like showing like a very broad range of emotions. I think of like his character storyline, and it's one that like he could have, like you could have left it like being like he's one of the like bad people, and he definitely shows like a layer of complexity of like someone who did a bad thing but isn't necessarily a bad person.
Yeah, that's another one. Like, he has to walk that line very
Yeah,
carefully.
there's a lot of like lines that have to be walked in the show, and they all manage to do it. Then, so the next child we have, Celia Gooding, who is amazing. She's so good, so good. So she plays the youngest child, Frankie. So she is adopted, and she is also black, and a lot of her storyline has to do with like feelings of like not quite belonging. And it seems like the approach that the show tells you like her parents kind of took is like, we don't see color, like race doesn't matter. And clearly, if you actually are a minority, race does matter. So there's a lot of complexity there. It's interesting to talk about this show because even though like the Broadway version, they do like kind of tighten the storylines to all be connected slash related to kind of Mary Jane in the center, there still are a lot of like equally important storylines going on. So that's one of her storylines. And then the other storyline is like kind of her like romantic and friendship life, where she has kind of like a situationship with her best friend, but then meets this like new like cool artsy boy in school named Phoenix, and they kind of have like an instant connection, so there's some conflict there. And then the third storyline, which I guess is like it's kind of like the this storyline is like the plot that like drives kind of like all the forward motion in the show, has to do with a classmate who there's like a party, and they go to the party, and at the party she is raped by one of their other classmates, and a big part of the plot is how everyone reacts to that and is trying to either get justice or help her get justice or like handle their own roles in it, and that really drives a lot of the action in the plot, especially in the second act. Yes, so Celia does an excellent job, and I think this then can take us to Katherine Gallagher.
Yeah, so we'll get into like that whole situation and the sort of like the driving plot of the whole show in a bit. But yeah, just to note, like Katherine Gallagher is phenomenal. Like she plays Bella,
Amazing. So
who
good.
is the girl who is assaulted in the show, and like she's really good friends with Derek Klena slash Nick, the older brother, and is like set up as like she's sort of like a cool girl at the school, and she's popular. She's one of the seniors who's just like
See, that's the thing. There's so much going on in
I
this
know,
show.
I'm
Like, it
like
all works, but it's almost like it's a difficult show to talk about because there are so many interconnected plot lines. So it's like when you start talking about one, you're like, and also.
Yeah, that's why I like that we're breaking down each character, because it's like, okay, sort of like here's the setup for what each character has got going on, and then all of
Yeah.
those, they establish these characters like not one-dimensionally, but I think that like the first scene with everybody sort of just is like, okay, like here's who this person is, and then the rest of the show is like them dealing with stuff and navigating that in relationship to each other, and sort of like certain people growing throughout the whole show and learning lessons and plot.
Yes.
but I feel like it's like a lot to explain when you're just sitting down and trying to like make it make sense. But then when you're actually watching it, it's very simple to be like, okay, like here's Frankie, like here's what she's got going on. She walks downstairs with a protest sign in her very first like line of the musical. Like you know what she's about.
Yeah, it's definitely, and that's actually, I know we're still talking about my characters, but one of the big strengths of this musical is if you like put all these plots on a piece of paper, like it would feel like that's too much for like one show. Like you can't
Yeah.
Like, it would seem like it would be, like, a mess to try and do all of this, but they really make it work. I think, like, it's very, like, realism approach to it, in that, like, if these circumstances were happening to real people and you just, like, filmed it, like, they would, like, each person would still, would, like, have a bunch of different things going on still. So I feel like it is, like, reflective of, like, what a reality could look like if this were a real thing happening.
Yeah, yeah. And just sort of, like, I feel like we've already pretty much talked about everyone, but just to round out everyone a little bit, you have Lauren Patton playing Joe, who is...
amazing.
Yeah, my God. She's Frankie's best friend. They're kind of dating secretly. Like, nobody... well, like, it's kind of unclear, like, who knows and who doesn't that they're kind of dating. Their parents definitely don't know. Lauren Patton is phenomenal.
Lauren Patton is amazing. So, oh my gosh. So Lauren Patton sings You Ought to Know.
It's so good.
Ugh. In the ART version, I think both times I went, there was a standing ovation in the middle of a show. And then I think in the first time I saw it on Broadway, there was also a standing ovation in the middle of a show.
Yeah. And this is like, it's not like an act closer or anything. It's just like in the middle of the second act, she just blows the roof off the house to the point where people are standing up and applauding. It's that good. I will say my favorite part of the whole show is that Lauren Patton, like, performs this song, does an absolutely phenomenal job. People are cheering. People will not stop cheering. And then there was, like, a split second where she broke character just a tiny bit and smiled because she couldn't help it. And I'm like, yes.
They hurt. Yes, but so who else are we leaving off? Oh, of course, Phoenix.
Phoenix, who's played by... Antonio Cipriano. Oh my God, he's actually like 18 years old.
I know.
And he does such a good job, and I love that he actually is, like, he actually is a teenager, and he's actually, I don't know, it's a smaller role in the show, but his job there is just to be, like, really sweet and, like, a good match for Frankie. Yeah. And then he gets a little bit of, like, a backstory, but not too much. But he just is there to sing well.
But one thing is, I kind of feel that's the one character that, like, I kind of feel like Phoenix got the short end of a stick a little bit. Like,
yeah.
So later in the show, like, Frankie tells him that she loves him, like, 5 seconds after they, like, met. Which is, like, fine to have feelings, but he doesn't say it back. And he gives a very, like, logical reason. He's like, that just, like, means a lot to me, so I don't want to say it yet. And she's like, come run away to New York with me. He's like, I have to help take care of my very ill sister.
Yeah.
And she gets really upset, and then it's never really resolved that, like, he kind of didn't do anything wrong at all.
Yeah, that is, like... We keep talking about how there's a lot going on in the show, and, like, they do such a good job of pulling it all together, and they do. But if there's anything that's sort of, like, something had to fall here, it's definitely Phoenix.
Yeah. I feel like Phoenix, especially, I think, in the last song of a show where, like, everyone's singing, there's, like, this little bit where he sings, like, I'd recommend, like, putting your foot in your mouth to anyone. And, like, Lauren Patton's character Joe, like, gives, like, a, like, I don't know, like, a look like, oh, you, like, kind of, like, you putting your foot in your mouth. I'm like, he actually did it. Like, poor Phoenix. It's okay, Phoenix.
Poor Phoenix did not know what he was walking into.
poor Phoenix, like, really didn't realize that he was getting into something this complicated. But he does an absolutely fantastic job.
Yeah, they all do. I love this cast. I don't know what it is, because I've seen lots of shows that I'm like, this is so amazing and all this stuff, but this is one of the very few casts where I can, like, name everyone. I don't know why, but I just can. I'm just, like, so attached to all of them, because they just, like, I feel like the combination of it being, like, an ensemble style show where they also all have a chance to stand out, and also just being a show that, like, I've seen at different stages of it, so I feel like, yeah, go team.
Yeah. And then I think just a shout out to the book writer is Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno. Great job. Just a shout out to her.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The team behind this, I mean, like, Diane Paulus, Diablo Cody, and Alanis Morissette, like, what more could you ever want? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, we've talked, like, about lots of different pieces of this show, but I want to focus in a bit on some of the changes that they made between productions, because I think that's super interesting. And one that I think works so well that was, like, a major difference that I noticed is that in the when I saw it at the ART, they had set it up so that Bella is friends with Joe and Frankie, and that her assault happens before the show ever starts. And so it's sort of the show, like, very early in the show, like, they're sort of trying to, they, like, she, like, doesn't come to school, and, like, Joe and Frankie go and find her and find out what happened, and it sort of goes from there, as opposed to how they just have set it up now, which is that, like, she's good friends with Nick and Andrew, and is, like, you see them being friends, and you see them hanging out and, like, being, mm-hmm. like, the popular kids together, and you, like, see them going off to this party and all this stuff. So instead of things happening, like, beforehand, and being, like, you don't really have a connection, you don't really see, like, the personal connection between the characters and how it works out, you actually, like, see the character relationships in a much different way. And also, like, watching it when you already know what's going to happen, you see this, the party coming closer and closer, you're like, oh my god. So yeah. That's also just an extra stressful element.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think, like, a big, like, something that like, change really established well by, like, making them friends before was the idea of, like, oh, X person couldn't have, like, done that. They couldn't have assaulted someone. They're so nice. They're friends. And it's like, no, people can still do terrible things.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then making it so that she's also, like, so that Bella's also really good friends with Nick. Because one of the big parts of the show is that Nick is, like, a witness to the party. Like, he was at the party. And so they're like, Nick, you have to speak out against Andrew once things start coming to light. And he doesn't. And so, and now it's not only, like, him being doing, like, a terrible thing to just someone that he knows. He's doing a terrible thing to, like, one of his best friends. And I feel like yes. It just makes it so much more heartbreaking. And also, frankly, realistic.
No, definitely. What about, like, I think there are even, like, you know, there are, like, lines in the show where they're like, oh, like, when things first start coming to light, where they're like, oh, you know, Bella, she's, like, so dramatic, like, she's always, like, something's always happening, and it just, it's just sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, I think that this show is trying to do so much, as we've established, but, like, sort of, like, the centerpiece of all of it is the story of sexual assault and the way that a community and a family reacts to it, and it, I do think it goes, like, right up to the line of being too much, mm-hmm. of being, like, what am I trying to describe here?
Like, trying to address all social issues, like, social justice issues all at once.
Yeah, and trying to, like, straw man it, where it's just, like, here we have painted, like, I don't know, like, trying to create this, like, straw man argument about it and showing it in this, like, cartoonishly villainous way. And instead, I think that it does a really good job of, like, there is a very clear villain, because this mm-hmm. is not an ambiguous kind of crime.
Yes.
But they don't do it in a way that's, like, mustache twirling, sort of, like, preachy kind of way. It's this more, like, you like, see relationships between characters, and you're like, well, I like this person, but not Andrew, but, like, Nick, who also is, like, mm-hmm. is, like, culpable in this situation, and you're like, well, I'm supposed to like this person, but also he does this terrible thing, and, like, it just becomes a more complicated situation. And I think the show does a good job of, like, condemning the crimes and condemning the rapist here without making it a show where people can kind of just, like, pat themselves on the back for being, like, I also thought the rapist was bad.
Yeah, this show covers a lot and a lot of, like, intense topics.
It's definitely, like, I think that it is very well done, as we've established. I also think that it is potentially very triggering, because it is yes. so vivid.
Yeah, I would definitely, like, not recommend, like, just, like, picking up a ticket to Jagged Little Pill and being like, I don't know what this is about, I'm gonna go see it. I think, yeah. like, having a rough idea. Will is like good to like helping you to decide whether it's something that is something you would like to go watch, mm-hmm. or if it will potentially be triggering.
Yeah. And I don't want to, and it's not tragedy porn. I think Which is, I think that one of the aspects of it being like so driven by its like female team and like having women creators, and like they really center, I think that it does center Bella really well and like allows her to tell her own story instead of like exploiting her story for sort of like emotional manipulation of the audience, which a lot of shows are guilty of doing. But I think that the sort of like the double-edged sword of that is it is more like vivid and realistic in sort of its discussion of that kind of thing, and like the reenactment that they don't like show it,
yeah,
but there is a interpretive dance reenactment of the party, which is like a lot.
Yes, it is very intense. It's a lot. Yeah, I will. So there's this, I forgot who the choreographer is for the show. The dance, how dance is used in this show is amazing.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's, so it, there are a lot of very intense dance moments and like dance numbers in the show. The dance style is just, it's very, it's haunting. It's very haunting, I think would be the right word.
Yeah. The choreography was done by City Larbi Chakao?
Yes.
He's Belgian.
Yes. And there's this one, oh my gosh, I'm going to find her name. One of the ensemble members does like the two very stylistic dance numbers, which one is the recreation of the party and one is, spoiler alert, Mary Jane's overdose. That is also a plot line, but we'll get to. And basically they have this dancer like sub in as like either Mary Jane or Bella for the dance number, like while the actual actresses playing them are like still like participating in the scene, but either as like an observer or like, it's very difficult to describe, but it's haunting. Heather Lang, that's her name.
She's so good. Because I was like, in the first half of the show, she's a member of the ensemble when you, and I noticed her, I was like, wow, like, I mean, all the ensembles, like, amazing dancers. There's a lot of dance, not with the main cast doesn't do a lot of dance, but the ensemble is like hugely motion focused and the choreography is really, really good. Anyway, and then in the second act, like she takes sort of the main dancer role, like in these two scenes, and it's beautiful and evocative.
Like the dancing is almost like ugh, I don't even know how I feel when I watch it. Is it's like liquid.
Yeah, I'm like, how does a human body move like that?
It's so fluid.
Yeah, the ensemble in this show is done so well because it's like they do have scenes where ensemble members are like playing the other moms in a coffee shop or like students in the high school or whatever. But most of the time when the ensemble is like performing, they're wearing like, I don't know, how would you describe their costume?
I'd say like grungy.
Yeah, costumes. They're very cool.
They're kind of like the grunge version of a Greek chorus in a lot of the show.
Yes.
Like if I think about like the entrance to like act two, like the lyrics are like, oh, this could get messy. And it's very like Greek chorus vibes.
Yeah, they'll like show up in scenes where they're not literally there. They'll show up in like the house where obviously they're not literally other people in a house in the story, but they function as this, like, I think the Greek chorus is a really good description. And also them singing, yeah. We See Right Through You at the very beginning of the show is just like
so, so good. I see right through. So good. They're just so good. Also, like, whenever, like a lot of the times, like, a number will start with the people who are physically present, and then the ensemble will, like, come on stage for the number and, like, be very involved. But by the time, like, the last note of the number hits, they're gone.
Yep. Yep.
And it, oh, so good. So good.
Can you tell that we like this show? Well, to circle back a little bit to Mary Jane's sort of like storyline, because I feel like at this point we've sort of talked around her, and I want to sort of return to her as the central character we were talking about before. So like, she's a mother of family. You have everything that's going on with the kids at school, where like Frankie has her sort of relationship stuff going on. There is the whole everything that happens around the rape of Bella, and like everything that I have to deal with and handle after that whole thing happened to like get peace and justice. And all these things are sort of happening around Mary Jane and like in relation to her, and like definitely involve her very closely at different points. But then there's also sort of like her internal storyline, which is her relationship with her husband and her struggle with addiction.
Yeah. So Mary Jane, her whole character is like someone who is desperately trying to like just hold the pieces of her like perfect life she's constructed, to just like hold them together. And it's like a broken teacup, like she's like holding the shards together and just is terrified that the moment she loosens her grip, it'll all just fall apart.
Yeah. And there's the very beginning of the show starts with her writing her yearly Christmas letter, which is such the typical like Connecticut suburb thing, where she's just like, my son's going to Harvard and my daughter's doing this and blah blah blah. And then, but even while that letter is happening, they're showing like the cracks in a really really effective way, where it's like she says something about like how close Frankie and her best friend are, and then like they're like making out in the background. And but I think that the part that like really gives me chills is when she says that she had an accident earlier in the year. She got in a car accident, and she was like, yeah, I've fully recovered in totally natural ways, like doing yoga and Pilates and meditation with that. And while she's saying these things, like she's taking pills, and you can see that she is lying through her teeth about her like so-called like natural remedies. Yeah. And then she says, I can't feel anything. And that part gives me chills.
Yeah, so good. That's another thing. The staging of this show is actually pretty, there's pretty like minimal set pieces in the show. Like there's not really a set for a lot of the show. Like they'll bring on some pieces, but it's largely like minimal set pieces. They use some like electronic screens. So, like when she says that, she's like talking about how she like has recovered by like doing hot yoga, and then like while she's doing it and saying like she can, like she doesn't feel anything, there's just like flames that keep like growing, and like the Greek chorus is there just like echoing louder and louder, but I see right through you.
Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. I and it's like, we've described the choreography of the show as very fluid, and I think that the set is designed to be such as well, where like the set pieces definitely like come in and out. There's no sort of like standard pieces that stay on stage the whole time. And even like if they have a classroom scene, they'll bring in all these desks and they'll all be on wheels, and there'll be parts of the scene where they're like flowing around and different kinds of things. So I can think of a lot of scenes off the top of my head where they use set pieces in movement and in the songs to like really capture this fluidity of the choreography as well.
But yeah, so kind of returning to her plot line, yeah, she's clearly like throughout this, she's clearly already in like the midst of an opioid addiction, but throughout the show it gets more like serious. The kind of plot timeline that it seems to be is she had a car accident, was prescribed opioids, and by the time the show is starting is at a point that she shouldn't, like she no longer has a valid prescription. Like it seems like it's fairly like recent, like she's kind of been able to like make it work up until that point and like lie to herself and be like, I have a prescription, it's fine. And this is like the beginning of it being like, it's more, much more difficult for her to keep telling herself that it's fine, whereas before she could like go to the CVS and like get her pills and be like, this is medicine, this is all, like I don't have an addiction, it's a doctor's telling me I can do this. It starts getting to the point where her prescription's expired, she's like buying things from like randoms on the street, like where it's clearly becoming more difficult for her to keep lying to herself about it.
Yeah, until eventually it is impossible. I think this comes back to what we were talking about before, and that like there's so many different things going on, but it doesn't feel crammed because these are just like things that go on in people's lives. Like there's no part of this show where I'm like, well, that wouldn't happen. Like it,
yes,
there's a lot happening, but that's like people's lives have a lot going on and they're all connected to each other. Like Mary Jane is trying so hard to preserve her perfect life, and like this car accident like leads her to an opioid prescription, and like it's very common for that to unfortunately lead to addiction. And then like that combined with like the way that she has this like sort of iron grip on her idea of a perfect life has like led to marital problems, which is very natural, and it's like led to relationship problems with her daughter because they don't know how to connect with each other, and like, and it's led to this extreme pressure like put on her son because he doesn't know how to cope with these kinds of things and like potentially disappointing his parents, and so like things just spiral out very naturally from like the setup that we have.
Yes. And then you actually also find out later in the show that when Mary Jane was in college, she was also assaulted and has never, like, when at the point, like, where she first talks about it, it's clear, right? Like, she's never, like, really processed it fully and, like, processed what happened to her. And I think they changed this from the ART version. Well, they changed like how she reveals this from the ART version, pretty significantly. In the ART version, I think she just, they're like in the kitchen and she's kind of like downplaying what happened to Bella.
Yeah.
And like saying, oh, the same thing happened to me in college. Like, what do you expect if you like go to a party and drink too much? And that's like the first time her husband's hearing about it, and she just kind of like dismisses it and doesn't want to talk about it. In the Broadway version, they actually have Bella come to talk to, oh my gosh, I just forgot the
song's Nick.
Name. Nick, I'm sorry. They actually have Bella come to speak to Nick about like the fact that he was there. She goes to their house and she speaks to Mary Jane in the kitchen, and Mary Jane actually tells her, about her assault in college and basically advises her, like when Bella asks like how, like what did you do, basically advises her to like push it to the back of her mind and like never think about it again. And that's something that at the end of the show, when she's writing her like updated Christmas letter a year later, post overdose, post a lot of these like traumas being dealt, like being starting to process, where she acknowledges that she was a victim of assault. So that's another kind of like plot line of Mary Jane's character and kind of like the progression there.
And it's so sad because, again, it's not an unrealistic thing. Like, that's how she has dealt with that her whole life, is by saying, well, it wasn't that bad, and I don't think about it, because if she thinks about it, then she'll have to deal with it, and she refuses to deal with it. And that leads to her like being really hurtful to Bella, because if she admits that what happened to Bella was rape, then she has to admit that what happened to herself was rape. And she like just like,
yes,
is not ready to process that yet. And it's just like, oh no. And so it's like, it doesn't absolve her of like what she did wrong in handling Bella's situation at first, but it also just shows like the complexity behind it. And it gives you you have sympathy for her in a way. It's like, it's not that she's just like an evil person who doesn't care about Bella. It's that she doesn't know how to handle these really difficult things.
There's a lot internally going on with Mary Jane that she has like processed, what has not processed, and has clearly placed a lot of blame on herself and a lot of like responsibility for just like accepting things and like moving on. That's just very tragic. And at the end of the show, near the end, she actually does overdose on opioids. And that actually ends up, it's kind of like, that is like, it's something so big, and it's something she can't keep a secret. Like, everyone's gonna know that she overdosed on drugs and had to be taken to the hospital, that it's like the facade of perfection is irrevocably gone. Like, it has broken. And it's at that point that she's able to like start healing,
and with her like the rest of her family. So they've all gone through their sort of like their traumas in relation to all the stuff going on, and then they finally get to a place where it's not that like everything's fixed now, which is like everything can start to heal from this point. The one thing I will say about this show overall is like, usually when we do these episodes, I like talking about sort of the history of the show and like its impact and stuff like that. And this is super new. It's still this season. So we don't have a lot of things to talk about there. And very unfortunately, it is paused. And I'm really bummed out about it because I feel like this is a show that would like do super well with the Tonys and like be successful and potentially have like a really cool impact because it is so heavy and because I do think it does a really good job of dealing with these topics and not only dealing with like really important topics, but I also feel like because Broadway's audiences are so like old and rich and white that it is, I would be very interested to see like if this has any sort of not like measurable effect because it's theater, it's on Broadway, it's fine, but just like the discussion that is generated by this show and sort of like if there is any sort of more widespread discussion that's generated from it in terms of like these issues of like race and like how we deal with sexual assault and stuff when it's presented in like a different way to an audience that perhaps is coming from more of a Mary Jane direction than a Frankie direction to these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll have to wait a little while to find out.
No, I think that makes sense. I think, yeah, I think like I have no stats on this. I think like the Broadway theater audience tends to be more progressive than like your average just random person from the US. But I think that even that, I think like that layers, the layers of it can still like provoke discussion because it does present like whereas a lot of the audience may have thought of like, as you said, like the Mary Jane kind of perspective, it presents a lot of other perspectives that especially like older audiences may not be fully aware or have like taken the time to consider.
Yeah, because I mean, I think in the show, like Mary Jane probably thinks of herself as progressive as well. Oh, yes. Like that's yes. I think that like the, a lot of people who would go to see this show would like definitely see themselves in the parents.
Yes.
And I think that it's why I think that it might be effective as sort of a conversation starter is that like it doesn't condemn the parents, but it does show you what they're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out, I guess.
Yes, I am really am hoping that it does not fall victim to the shutdown like some of the other shows.
We believe in you, Jagged Little Pill.
I'll come see you again.
Yeah, Janelle definitely will. Let's end this on a high note with the lightning round. So, Janelle, what is your favorite song in Jagged Little Pill?
Okay, so for a lot of a lightning round, I'm going to be terrible and give multiple answers.
Can't wait. Okay, go hit me.
Two favorite songs. So Uninvited, which is the song when Mary Jane overdoses because of the staging and choreography. And then You Learn, just because I think it's like the perfect cap off to the song, or to the musical. You live, you learn, you love,
you learn, you cry, you learn, you learn. It was so nice of Alanis Morissette to write a song that is the ending to a musical before that musical existed.
I know, she just knew.
What is your favorite line?
Okay, so I'll give two lines. So the first one is a little silly, but I just really love it. So during the first song, Frankie says, "Do I stress you out? My sweater's on backwards and inside out." And you say, "How appropriate." And that's direct, like that's a direct Alanis Morissette song. But then Nick, so Frankie's not wearing a sweater in this scene, but Nick just says, "She didn't say anything about your sweater." Well, she might be wearing a sweater, but like Mary Jane didn't like commented about like her shorts being too short. And I just love the fact that they like added something to acknowledge that, okay, yeah, this lyric doesn't actually perfectly fit into the scene.
Yeah. Also, oh my God. Just to interject my own thing is they do ironic, but they stage it as Frankie reading a slam poet to her English class. And her class is like, that's not what irony means.
It's really funny. They basically just keep roasting her throughout the entire thing.
It's great.
And like giving examples of what, like they're like, if we're using irony as defined in Greek tragedy. Yeah, there's a lot of like self, there's a lot of self-awareness in the show, which is it like self-awareness of the fact that like yes, a song like songs that were already written won't perfectly fit in all the time. That I appreciate. And then the other favorite line, which is a more serious line, is after Mary Jane overdoses, her family rushes to the hospital and no one knew anything about it, didn't realize she had an addiction. And her husband's speaking to the doctor and he's telling her about the overdose. And the husband's like, no, like she like works out like 3 times a week, she eats healthy. Does she look like a drug addict to you? And the doctor just says, what do you think a drug addict looks like? And it's like a small line, and like the plot continues moving after that, like after a few seconds, but it's so like poignant. And just I think it's a very like thought-provoking line.
Oof, that's a good one. Who is your favorite character?
Oh, there's so many good ones. I think I'll have to go with Mary Jane just because she is kind of like the central character that like melds all these plots together. And then just her character, her character, and then especially like obviously I've only seen Elizabeth Stanley, but the way that she's portrayed, there's just such a palpable sense of like the fact that even when in the beginning when she's like theoretically like confident in her perfect life, like a deep fear of like losing everything that you can just like is always present until the end of the show, that I just find fascinating and think is an extraordinarily well-written character.
If you were going to play a character in the show, who would you want to play?
Oh, so I was thinking about this one. I don't know. I think. Okay, so if I knew how to dance, I'd want to be the dancer. Yeah. So I think in terms of like, if I had that talent, I would. Like, if I were a dancer, that would be like my top role to ever perform. In terms of other characters, I don't really know because they're all so good. I guess I would go with Mary Jane, just again because of like the layers of complexity, though all the characters are complex. I just think it'd be really interesting to like try and dig into that. But yeah, this one I don't have a solid answer for because they're just all great.
I know, there are no bad roles in this
And
show.
all the roles are written extraordinarily well and are complex. And then they also every like main character like has like at least one song that's like their like moment.
Yeah, they all get a chance to shine and they take advantage of it. Who would you recommend to go see this show?
I mean, I would recommend it to anyone with the caveats of what we were speaking about before regarding like kind of the trigger warning aspect of it. But outside of that, I'd recommend it to anyone. Maybe wouldn't recommend it to like take your kid, your small child to.
Yeah, it's like PG-13 for sure.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a PG-13 show. But yeah, I'd recommend it to anyone. It's definitely not, it's not like with Mamma Mia, where like if you hate ABBA, you probably should, like, or if you're not an ABBA. I wouldn't necessarily recommend going to see Mamma Mia unless you really love ABBA, because though Mamma Mia is super fun, in my opinion, it's maybe not the best written show plot-wise in the world.
What? How can you say that?
But whereas this show is, it's as I mentioned before, like it very much feels like not a jukebox musical. Like it feels like it could have been like fully original in music, and the plot is original. So like any musical theater fan, I think would enjoy this. The music also doesn't sound, because the orchestrations, which I realize did not give a shout out to Tom Kitt,
Oh my God, they're
who
amazing.
did
Shout
the
out to Tom Kitt.
orchestrations for this show. Amazing. The songs very much sound like songs from like a rock-esque musical as opposed to like the original songs, which the original songs are fantastic, but these definitely sound like songs for a theater production.
Yeah, they do. It like it really, I think it stands along like any other rock musical with the music written specifically for the show. And I don't know how they did it, but they
Yes,
did it.
I know. Tom Kitt.
Tom Kitt, man. And finally, if you could combine this with another show, which one would you pick?
Oh my gosh. So I was preparing my answers to some of these and I completely forgot to do that one. So this is going to be on the spot. You know what? Let's put it together with Spring Awakening.
Okay. Damn.
Let's like, and I'm like not even saying like meld it and like make it into a new thing. Like let's have like split scenes going back to like 1900s Germany. Like let's do.
Yeah, these would go really well together. I feel like they do. I hate it because it's good. That's just like, it hurt my brain to think about.
I feel like it would weird, like, if I like spend more time thinking about it, I'll be able to articulate it more. But I just feel like if you had like a double billing show where you're like, at 7 p.m. we'll play, like, Spring Awakening will be on, and then at 9 p.m. Jagged Little Pill. It just feels right somehow.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're both rock musicals dealing primarily sort of with teenagers dealing with various issues. They both have, like, queer relationship subplots. They both have, like, sexual assault subplots. There's some variants after that, and obviously they're in very different settings, but I feel like thematically and musically, I really see it. And also, like, if just watching one is not enough pain for you, watch both.
Yeah, you know what? Just, like, make a day of it. Just make a day of being sad.
Yeah, you might as well, like, combine that all into one thing and just be really cathartic.
I think, like, similar musical styles, similar plot elements. I just think they'd work together well as a double billing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Janelle. This has been so much fun. And you are delightful as always.
Thank you, Quinn. Thank you for having me. You are wonderful as always.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. See you next week.